A62. Number 23B.
We have done now the seven main editions, and so in my book I went further and went to my chapter 3, which gives now an analysis of the chapter Animal Magnetism as we have it today. And now we have an interesting thing to contemplate. We have seen first in a general review that the chapter as it is written now actually has the main tone of truth and love as science, and that the text has hardly anything left that was once in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth main revision. But when one compares the last edition with the text of the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth edition, there is hardly anything left of it. And that which is left of the former editions is put, and this is interesting, is put into a new perspective. It is now put into the perspective of science, namely of truth and love. So that which first was written through the first seven edition as a metaphysical explanation now appears in the last edition explained from the standpoint of science. But I must first show you, or what you have in here, the interrelationship of the seven main edition and the actual text as we have it now. The actual text that we have now has seven subjects in it. So if we read the chapter Animal Magnetism, we can see that she first presents now, in its final revision, the subject from the point of view of mind, then another few paragraphs from the point of view of spirit, and a few paragraphs from the point of view of soul, then a few paragraphs from the point of view of principle, then life, then truth, then love. So, her last edition includes all seven. It means the problem of animal magnetism is viewed through the seven synonymous term, from seven aspects, and this is something thrilling, but those seven subjects are not just seven subjects. They are, so to say, the core of the revisions. So that the first subject of mind in the present edition is, so to say, presenting the core of the first main edition of mind. That the core of the second subject in the present chapter is, so to say, the pith of what Mrs. Eddy wanted to convey in the second revision. And so the third subject of soul in the present text, so to say, giving the pith of the third revision, and so forth through the seven. Meaning that actually the present chapter is a very condensed summary of the seven main revisions. But when I say that, I didn't put it clear enough. because I have to add now something and say it is not just a summary, a short summary of the message or the pith of those seven main editions, but she gives now those seven main editions from the point of view of science, so that the first subject of mind is not only, so to say, giving the pith of the first main edition, but is also showing it from the point of view of science, namely from the synonymous term, from mind, which is naturally quite a difference. Did you get it? Yeah? See? Repeat it. Huh? Just that little bit. Yeah? I like to see, I like to be sure that you see that. Actually, it's in the book, but I know that one doesn't read books, you see. And if one reads it, it's an art to read books. Anyway, my books. Because I never write reading material. I always write study material. And therefore, my books cannot be read. See? That therefore, that book on animal magnetism has been read and felt, it's not really what I expected, because all those nice stories about animal magnetism, how they can kill each other mentally, is not in it, and it's not really thrilling. So away goes somewhere into a shelf. And if you put it into a shelf, I'm quite happy with it. But put it into a shelf. Don't throw it away. The time will come, it will save your life. I said that 2 or 3 years ago, and since then I had many people who wrote me, you were right. I took it from my shelf and saved my life. So keep it there. If you're not interested in it, keep it in the shelf. One day it will be your savior. It has saved my life. Without that book, or without the subject of that book, I think I would have gone. Keep it. It's a terrific book. But you can't understand it by reading it. Just not possible. So everything I have said up to now, this whole day, and what I'm going to say the whole day, is in the book, actually. I wouldn't have to say it if the book would have been read and studied. We just could have started writing and say how happy we are about that book and how terrific the whole subject is, and so on and so on. But I know reading a book is an art. Sometimes at home I give just a course on how to read a book, how to approach a book, just the technicality of how to study a book, how to make notes about a book, what one has to consider in reading a book. People who have learned spelling and reading a little bit and consider themselves no more to be analphabets, they feel they can read a book. They can't. They can't. It is a proven thing that even university graduates, very few of them can read. Very few can read. They read, but they do not see what they read. Because reading a scientific book is not understanding sentence by sentence and asking, is that sentence appealing to me or not appealing to me? It means much more. It means to see really the main points in it and have a sense of a hierarchical understanding of a subject. What is the greatest point in it? How is that biggest point somehow analyzed through further categories? How is that further analyzed? How is the relationship within that subject? What is the relationship between the beginning and the end? How are they interrelated? Things like that only can really disclose, can you say disclose, the meaning of a text. So that's why actually I wanted to go through this book with you, as I do today, telling you exactly what is in the book. I haven't said a word that is not in the book until now. But I feel I would like once to draw the attention to how one can really take the best out of a presentation.
Yes. Where have I been?
By repeating what I want to say, you see. What we find out, or what comes out now, is this. That though the chapter as it is now is not containing everything that has been stated in the previous six revisions, that though most of it has been left out and the text has been reduced quite considerably, the subject, the tonality of it is still there, meaning that the first subject of mind in the present text is summarizing the tonality, not the text, the tonality, the subject of the first main edition, plus putting it in such a way that it deals that subject from the point of view of science and not from a metaphysical point of view. Because we have seen in the development of the text, that text has undergone a change after the fifth main edition from metaphysics to science. What is metaphysics? It's all in the book, but I say it again. What is metaphysics? When you approach a negative problem and try to see the truth about that negative problem. When you go from a negative problem, from a material problem, and rise above the material problem to the metaphysical, the above the physical, then you approach a problem metaphysically. That's what most Christian scientists do, not realizing that this is not Christian science. That's another problem. That's another way of animal magnetism. Whereas, what is science? In science, if you are running against a problem, you put the problem aside. You put the problem behind yourself. You don't argue with the problem. You don't consider the problem. You don't ask questions to the problem. You don't argue with that problem. You put it aside, and then you turn to the synonymous terms. You see? And go out from the synonymous terms, truth and love, which only knows that which is true and that which is real, and which knows that everything that does not coincide with that which is true and real is a suppositional lie. And then, that's from the point of view of science, and then you know that that which goes out from truth is all, that's the point of love, is all, and the suppositional lie is nothing. Then we have approached the problem from science. And in the textbook here now, Mrs. Eddy approaches now that whole problem of mind, namely animal magnetism as being an influence, you see, as being an influence, as Mesmer has found it to be an influence between the stars and living organism and things like that, and Mrs. Eddy takes it out of that influence business and puts it right on the mind and says mind is the only business. All the rest is esoteric magic. That's how she ends the first paragraph. Can you see the difference? And in spirit, for instance, she doesn't anymore argue about is now metaphysics mesmerism or are mesmerists metaphysicians, about that whole duality of the mental. She takes now the standpoint of spirit as the only reality and truth and says, there is only one attraction, that of spirit, and makes a clean cut that there are not two powers at work, that there is only one power at work, and that's the real power. See? And so she goes through all the four subjects, you can read it in the book, you see, taking up the main subject of those main revisions, but no more dealing with it through metaphysics, but from the point of view of the synonymous term, from the point of view of science. Yeah. Did I make myself clear on this point now?
Yes.
Yeah. So that we can now see, you see, why one was so disillusioned or, golly, I don't find the right term, not happy that one wouldn't find in the chapter all the nice stories. Because all those nice stories are from the point of view of metaphysics and not of science. Therefore, you can see how science is a shortcut. It doesn't have to deal with all kinds of problems and questions and so on. The moment we go out from the seventh synonymous term, we have the biggest shortcut we can think of, because science is always the shortcut. And it also shows that if we are thinking along those synonymous terms, as we have been doing this week, that we are actually handling animal magnetism. Because we fill our mind so much with truth and love that no error entered in. I was thinking yesterday night somehow, I was thinking, what have we been doing this week? It passed by so quickly. I thought, what have we really been doing? And one point that struck me was this, that we hardly ever talked about God and men. I think the term men hardly entered into our discussion. This is a good sign. Huh? This is a terrific good sign. Because it meant that we were constantly reasoning things out from the synonymous terms, as we have it here, from the synonymous term, that the maximum of good is God and His ideas. So we are contemplating mind and mind's ideas, spirit and spirit's ideas, and so on. And with this, we really handled the claim of animal magnetism that we are men, a mortal, somebody. We handled that claim because we eliminated that claim. And I think we were all quite happy without talking about men. Without asking, but what am I? Without asking, how does it apply to me? I was quite astounded that none of these questions came up over all those many hours and days that we were contemplating our subject. Isn't that? I felt that terrific. Yeah. That really we begin to see in this way that what Mrs. Eddy discovered, that she say discovered a principle, and that principle and idea is one, and that is God, the infinite being. There is nothing beside it. I guess this is a line of reasoning or a method that we have used without wanting to do it. It was just because the exercises did flow that way. That is helping us to get away from the personal I. So that actually only the I am of mind and of spirit and soul, principle, life, truth and love, was the I am-ness that was under consideration. And we were quite happy with that I am-ness. Nobody asked, but how does it apply to me? As it doesn't apply. Yeah. Alright, so if we go through this chapter, we can see that this attitude of dealing with the seven main subjects from the point of view of truth and love just runs right through it. Now, in that case we would come to chapter 3. I said that before. Come to chapter 3 in my book about the analysis of the chapter. And I have set the tone, the standpoint from which he writes, so that we do not expect another standpoint. And so from that standpoint of science, she develops the chapter through the seven subjects. I have tried to give that structure in the book so that you have it there, the main tones, the seven main tones, and then the main tones divided up in sub-tones. And this gives rise to two questions. The first question, I hope I don't forget the other one after I have been talking about the first one, is this, that here is, say, an example, as we don't have it practically up today, except perhaps in John Dolly's books on the practice, where we could, say, culture our tonality in text interpretation. That you have a text which is already laid out, which says what is the layout of it, what is the epitome of the main tone, what are the epitomes of the subtone, so that the text would be a help, say, in culturing us in text interpretation. So that you can take that text not so much, say, to understand what it means in the first place, but to see, can I, when reading the text, see the structure behind it, the structure of mind in seven tones, spirit in three tones, soul in five tones, and so on, as it is laid out. So it lends itself as a drilling ground, so to say, for culturing us in text interpretation. Which means what? You see, there is always some wisdom about method. I think if we have method, we are always safe. And John Dolly came and showed us the Bible in its structure, and showed us, you see, you have here a book on the Bible like Samuel. You don't have to read it as words. You can read it spiritually as tones. And reading it as tones, you suddenly see the order in it. And seeing the order, it becomes quite clear to us how it applies to us. It gathers enormous importance and understanding. But his ability at that time to do that was unique. No one else at that time could do that. Because no one had, so to say, cultured their consciousness to that point where somebody could read tonality-wise. Now you know what I mean with that, huh? Tonality-wise. He put it down into writing in order to prove his thesis. Now what did the students do? Or what is the contribution that the students should give? It is not to say, oh yes, oh that's wonderful how he did it. I am also going to read that book on the Bible and find out a layout, what they did. And everybody found another layout. And everyone who found out another layout was very happy. He felt he was a genius he could do it too. Not noticing that he didn't find out the truth about it, but that his uncultured consciousness could find any old layout. It's not difficult to put any of this book into any old layout. The question is the layout within itself consistent? Has it within itself scientific criteria which would show that his findings are consistent within the whole system, in the whole structure? That's another question, you see. Therefore, the safety is not to try to be a big shot like John Dolittle, but to be humble enough to say, I first sit at the feet of a master and learn from the master before I try to be a genius and say, I find something different than he has found, I'm even a bigger guy than he is and a bigger revelator than he is. A student should really have that humility to sit down and take years and years just to try to see what the master has achieved. Not to try to surpass the master. He can do that later if he's equipped well. And therefore, I felt I could easily spend about 5 or 7 years just on going through his interpretation and see how could I verify his interpretation the way he gave it. Why did he interpret it that way? Sorry, I must stop here. And so try to first see how can I verify what he has found and culture my consciousness first in that ability to get into the train of thinking and of consciousness of somebody whom we know has a high standard of spirituality. And in this way, taking a few years just to train oneself in that consciousness is giving us that foundation, that sure foundation on which we afterwards can build. Okay.